We're at the Archie Expo. We're actually in a little room built by DuraPanel. If you can't see, it's pretty much been branded everywhere.
What is DuraPanel? That's all we carry.
The DuraPanel, it's a, from my understanding, isn't a compressed straw board.
So it's waste product.
Yeah.
I know a little bit about it because we've actually had Derek on the SBA before, one of our webinars, and it's actually waste product that typically gets burnt. They bring it in and they heat compress it.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was waste product.
No, it's all waste product. And then the lignin within the – so as they steam it up and compress it, like the lignin within the straw then binds it all together. So there's actually no binders in here.
There's a lot of products out there. The Expo Haim and I will probably walk around the next day. We might even do like a recap at the end of it of just some cool stuff we saw. But there are so many awesome products like this that are really pushing the market, I think, coming up.
You know the other thing? I don't know how the fuck we got our own bloody podcast booth at the ArchiBuild Expo.
And, you know, it's just shit work sometimes. Like, it's just we put the feelers out. I think it's probably a good point to start. Like, I think sometimes we don't stop and celebrate where we're at, and we're always trying to find that next thing that we want to do. And we and between me and you, there's a million different conversations going at once and ideas flowing around. But
do you know what? I was actually thinking on the car ride on the way here. I actually think it's surprising that we actually get anything done, because I think that you and I have had so many conversations about yours and mine, different roles within the podcast, and we landed on something, and then all of a sudden I'm doing this and then you're doing that. And then we've, so anyway, it's happening. We're in a soundproof box. Now, we're actually going to have Derek Layfield, who is the owner of DuraPanel. He's going to come on and we'll get him to better explain what this is. But this, from what I understand, is actually a kit. So if you are interested in having your own, I guess, soundproof kit, if your kid plays drums or whatever, this is what you want.
Or you just got a screaming baby like I'm about to have and might put one in the middle of my house, or, you know, screaming room.
Maybe I'll put all three of my kids in there.
Well, they actually joked yesterday, the organizer Ash, who set us up with this, she's like, maybe we can turn this into a screaming room and charge like $5, $5 a minute if you're just going nuts trying to get stuff done. This podcast episode, we're going to try to keep this one a little bit short. It's more just a bit of an update on where we feel the industry is at the moment. I know, Haim, I get a lot of comments about asking my opinion, especially through social media, on where things are at. I probably take more of a glass half empty approach.
Well, that's great, because I usually take a half
empty. Yeah, so I think between this conversation here is a pretty good mix. I have an opinion at the moment that pricing is expensive, and we're Hamish and I are trying really hard to work out how to navigate this conversation. It's not an easy one because we know we're going to get picked apart. We're probably going to do maybe a good series with some estimators, some quantity surveyors, people who have maybe built them, how they felt, like, and just really try to draw the process out and a big understanding of where things are coming in and why they're so expensive.
And you know what? I was actually thinking I actually might say some controversial stuff during this episode as well, which I kind of try and remove myself from. But I do have something that I do want to bring up later on, and it's designers and architects putting their opinion of cost forward.
Let's just start with that. I actually think it's a really good point. When we're involved as a project, clients like, why do we need you involved? We've got the architect. And it's like, I always say that we're there to talk about buildability, structure and costings. That's what we know.
Mm-hmm. And
we
know and our expertise and performance.
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of think that's just, yes. But I feel that's assumed now when people come to us.
Yeah.
But the costing is a big one, because how can we expect architects, and I think there's an unfair expectation on architects to know what things cost.
Yep.
I think the issue, what happens is, because they're seeing so many different prices and stuff, they just assume things, oh, this is what it should cost, or this is what it does cost, or we think it should cost, but don't actually understand the behind the scenes stuff.
And look, I agree with this sentiment to a point. You know, an architect designer, and look, just for the record, this is not about poo-pooing on architects and designers, because, you know, we all have our place within this pre-construction process.
Yeah,
right?
We're not designers.
But I think when an architect turns around and goes, well, that's expensive.
Compared to what?
Well, that's exactly right. And I think this is what I want to try and get to. And I think this is why I was a bit apprehensive about talking about cost with you.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a minefield when we start talking about cost, because obviously we're coming from a builder's point of view, and like my initial kind of response is, well, that's what it costs because we've just costed it. So that's what the cost is.
And if this is one thing I always say to clients, like, if I could get your cost at a point where you're happy with, I would click my finger and I can click my fingers and do it. I'd do it tomorrow because it saves us so much time. The amount of effort we have to put in to get just pull every dollar out of that project to get it on site.
The value management piece is actually the biggest part of our pre-construction
process. I would say it's 50% of my personal time as my job.
Well, it might be 50% of your time. It's almost 80% of Dan's time. It's probably 30% of Robert's time. And then you add me in there as well. That is a huge amount of energy that we put into costing. And maybe that's a good thing to touch on because we just don't go, all right, here's a square meterage, there's the price. Like, we dive deep. We turn rocks over. We try and find the best value for our clients when we're costing a project. And the reality is we might get to a number which doesn't fit within their budget.
And I think that's the budget meets brief. The conversation is really important. And it's a really hard one to navigate because I feel so sorry for architects because from what I understand, I've done a bit of investigation into this recently. I think they're obliged by their code that they have to design the brief.
Yeah.
So it's not fair to them as well to put pressure on them to say, hey, the clients come to, I want four bedrooms, I want three baths and blah, blah, blah. My next one had a mudroom and another one had a theater. So let's add this all in. So they draw it all out. They go, we know you can't afford this, but we're going to show you. And then the thing is they also show them what their budget can get them, but they always fall in love with the one that they can't afford. Yeah. And now they're stuck. They can't go backwards. And I really do feel for architects and a lot of the ones we work with, like I'm just thinking of the two girls I share the office with, Circle Studios, like they are getting builders in instantly and they are so good at not commenting on price. Like we just did a price with them. I don't think I got one question back on any number in that line item other than like, thank you for putting that together. And they understand where every line item is coming from. We're also working with a quantity surveyor to run those numbers as well. So when we get them, like this isn't really my numbers coming in. I'm getting what industry data tells us. We're putting our special touch on it, adjusting it, going, we don't need that, we don't need that, we can change that. And then we're putting the price together, getting some things quoted. So we'll always send out windows early on.
Yep. This is in your kind of, I guess, opinion of cost stage.
Yeah. And I just, and the thing is like, that's where I'm getting to. There's so much effort that goes into that conversation and that putting a price together that for someone to then come out and whim like a building designer and go, oh, that's too expensive, but they're compared to what?
There's thinking something is expensive. Right now we're looking at cars, right? You know, the cars that I would like to buy now for my growing family 10 years ago.
Ferrari.
That's my car. That's my quoting car, sorry.
You're hitting that mid-age life crisis, 40, 45, need the convertible.
Well, that's 2 years away. But you know what I mean? Like I look at, you know, so we're looking at a 200 or 300 series Land Cruiser at the moment. And then even secondhand ones are like 120,000, right? That's a lot of freaking money. But I don't think it's expensive. It's just what it costs.
So this is a very good point. I'm going to find something that I found recently. I got sent this Facebook group about essentially people talking about costs of building. And there was one comment in here that, and I can't take credit for what they said because I was like, this is just one of the most true things ever. And the person that wrote it, his name was Ryan. So I'm not going to give his last name. But I'm going to read out what he said because it really challenged my thinking on building costs. And I've never thought of it this way, but it kind of answers where I think things are at. He said, asking a custom builder to give a square meter price is like asking how much a shopping trolley full of groceries is going to cost. The only way of knowing exactly how much a trolley will cost is when every item is in it is known and has been fully costed at the register, and that involves a fixed price quote from, say, the supermarket. It's the same as a builder. They go out, they get all their quotes, they put it together, and they go to their suppliers and trades and get the final estimate. There's no real difference.
Yeah.
I think that for me, that was this big aha moment where in life we're so happy just to go to the supermarket and scan things that have a high, way higher markup rate than we put on our building. It's just a huge amount of money we have at the end of it.
So I think it was actually Amelia Lee who came up with that analogy because I heard
it
was a while ago. And what's really great about using that analogy is that we all shop, right? We all go up and down the aisles and we all have a list of the things that we want when we first go in there.
Yeah.
But Matthew, do you just pick up random things along the way because you're like, well, I want that?
I do sometimes, but the thing is I know I'm paying for it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is we do this and sometimes even subconsciously that the list that we go in with can sometimes differ when we get – well, there's more on that list when we get to the cash register.
Yeah.
It's the same when we're designing a home. You might go in with your list of, you know, likes or wants or needs, and then along the way the designer might go, well, what about this? And then what about that? And this is no stab at a designer, but as a designer, their role is to put in front of the clients what they think that they want. The biggest difference between going shopping is you can actually see the prices of these things. We can't see the prices of those things when we're adding these things in when you're going to that design phase. That's where the builder comes into it, because the builder can then help you understand what impact those things have on your price. I don't think the designer can do that.
No, I don't, and I don't think they should. And I'm pretty sure architects aren't actually able to give advice on pricing. I also think that's within their like constitution. And look, the awesome ones that we work with, like, they're pretty good. Like, they'll push you, and so they should push us on price 100%. To be creative. Yep. So they, at the same time, I think the builders just also poo-poo on an architect because they go, well, the architect's trying to bust me on price. It's like, hey, yeah, but if you were to go through that item's quite expensive. Surely we can, they're not saying do it cheaper. They're saying how else can we be creative to get the same result?
Yep.
It's like, and it's using the shopping analogy again, is where you might go in to buy your pasta. I might want to go get that beautiful pasta from Italy that's, I know, that fancy one that I sometimes get that's $12 for a pack of spaghetti.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, actually, that's expensive at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm just going to go buy the $2 package. But I'm still getting the same thing. It's a little bit different. It's probably not as good, but it's you've sometimes got to settle. And that's my biggest thing to clients is you've got it. It's got to be give and take. And it's a hard process. Like, we've had, I think, I was calculating the other day, $7.5 million worth of work since November last year. We've had projects fall over. Mm. And I know I'm not the only one. I know that so many people are in this position. I think building's as hard as it's ever going to get. I know there's massive changes coming in from an insurance perspective and the owner's first access to insurance in building. I think that's going to push price up, especially in the commercial sector. I think that there's a number of changes. I think the next year are going to really dramatically change the way we look at building. And you're about to go through building your house. I'm doing mine at the moment. Stuff's expensive. And I'm looking at it being like, geez, that's very overvalued. And I'm getting looked after very well on some certain things. I just can't see, and this is why I'm glass half empty. It's like, I just can't see this price increase. And it's not increasing like it was. I just can't see this price staying the way it is in building for much longer.
My glass half full approach to that is look, when you're backed into the corner, it creates innovation and change. And I think that's where the industry is going at the moment. So what you're going to see is you're going to see more competitors, and I'm talking specifically to the high performance market, more competitors are going to come in.
But I think this is where we get caught in the whole high performance market. I don't think it's custom architecture. Custom architecture is expensive. It's the high performance element is not, it's maybe an extra 1-2%. I'm going to say passive house is definitely 20% on a build in most cases. If you've got to chase passive house certification.
Do you know what is going to happen? People are going to start looking overseas.
Yeah.
And probably.
And we've spoken about it.
Particularly China. And then what's going to happen? People are going to start losing sales to China. It's going to force innovation. It's going to force change. It's going to force efficiencies. So I don't think building prices are going to come down. I don't think it's going to skyrocket up as it has been or will be. One thing that I probably will say, just circling back to the designers thing, and again, take this however you want designers and architects who are listening to this. Instead of saying that's expensive, why don't you say help me understand that cost? Because if we can help you understand that cost, because as soon as someone says that's expensive, like I know I have a physical reaction to it. I'm just like, well, hang on a minute. No, I'm not the one that designed this. I'm just costing what's drawn. But if we can help you understand the cost, then we can work collaboratively to try and work out how we can find a more cost-effective solution. Saying it's expensive doesn't get anywhere.
Yeah, it's the language. And I remember listening to a podcast on the Diary of a CEO and how you got to approach conversations where if you just say to someone, I disagree, immediately they're back in the corner. Yeah. Where if you can make that conversation more proactive and encourage the open sort of, yeah.
Collaborate.
Dialogue, yeah. Like if we can sit down and be like, okay, this, you've looked at this cladding, you've been told it's $100 a square meter, but we've come in at $300. The reason why is the clips behind it to install this are another $50 a square meter. The rail that we have to use as per the installation guide is this.
Yep.
The salesperson has probably gone out to the architect and told them, hey, yeah, this is what the cladding costs, forgetting to tell them all the little bits and pieces around it.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, that's not the architect have been blindsided. So when we run them through that, they're like, ah, oh, that makes sense. Mm. Also, labor's so expensive. I've started running numbers and I'm probably saying about 40 to 45% of a whole project's cost is directly to labor, with 10% being GST, the overheads and margin being part of that. So the huge cost of building is actually labor. And that's something that we can't change unless it is huge innovation, which we always talk about it, and it's prefabrication. It's really stuff like potentially this.
Robots.
Yeah.
Humanoid robots.
Yeah, I just think that we're going to get to a point where there's going to be things that like that. And I don't think trades like plumbing are going to go into robots or anything like that. But I can see something like a painter, like there's a machine that goes around and paints. And
I feel that the construction industry is reasonably safe for the next 10 years from AI and robotic innovation.
On site. Back end, I think there's a lot of changes that will happen.
We're kind of digressing a little bit because you need to touch on, you know, how we can bring the prices down. One's prefabrication and one's efficiency in building. Yeah. If we can expedite the process.
Remove the red tape.
Red tape's another thing. The quicker something's done, the less it's going to cost because your overheads come down, your supervision comes down, your risk comes down, your risk profile comes down because you're on site less. So innovation and efficiencies, and whether that's through AI or whether that's through robotics, has to be where it goes.
So I've got two things that I think. One is I think there's too many people in the last few years who have tried to get construction's booming and they're adding another layer before we can get our hands on it as builders. So you, for example, you buy something from the manufacturer, they sell it to a supplier, they sell it to someone else, they sell it to someone else, and then we get our hands on it. And there's four people along the way putting their margin on it. I see a world coming up very quickly where someone like, for example, a timber merchant, we don't have to go through, say, a Mitre 10 or a Bowen, so we can go directly to the timber company because at the end of the day, those companies can actually increase their price on it because they're not having three or four people along the way. They can still give it to us cheaper than what we can buy it from anywhere else and just cut the in-between. I think there's way too many in-between people in construction. Everyone's trying to make a really quick dollar on it, especially during COVID. Everyone's trying to make it harder to get products. And I think if we can cut people out along the way, that's a huge one.
I just don't know if that'll happen though, because I feel like I hear what you're saying and maybe there is some lost efficiencies there from it going from one person to another to another to another. I can't see that happening because that's how the world worked in the last...
I feel, especially in Victoria, like I think there's 40,000 jobs that are going to come out of nowhere soon because we don't have any more tunnel and rail that's happening. So those people have to go somewhere and those companies still need to sell concrete and plaster and whatever. Yeah. So what's going to happen is like, I don't know, I've already had people like Boral and stuff start reaching out to me directly to be like, hey, like, can we tell you about our product? Like James Hardy directly. Like, it's like, hey, you want to know about me now? Like, you don't want to know about me when you guys are doing well. It's when you guys are starting to get quiet. So I can see a world where you just call James Hardy, for example, and we're going to buy directly through you guys. And rather than I have to go through the distributor, then go to, say, the Mitre 10 or someone, and then we get our hands on it. And there's 30% and then another 30% margin on it, and then we get it. And then the reality is, as a builder, we've got our margin on it. So we can then potentially cut the costs there. I think that's a whole probably conversation itself. I think the other one comes down to massive changes through bank and legislation, insurances. And I think this moves in more in line with the rest of the world is where we have a contract that is, and we've been looking at this a bit recently, is we can run at a fixed price contract with a fixed margin, like a fixed margin, but it's kind of like a bit of a cost plus where if the timber, it costs what it is, we show you the receipt, but our margin is fixed. So we don't have any benefit if it goes up or down. We just have our fixed margin. Yeah. And I think that's an area where we can start to potentially cut costs because as a builder, we can reduce our risk on not having to inflate something. So for example, a project with joinery, you might be on site for 12 months, 13 months before you order your joinery. You just pay what it's worth.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting one. I need to touch on the banks there. Banks are really apprehensive about costing rise and fall contracts, and that is like cost plus. So cost plus I think will work for cash clients and I don't think it's going to work for finance clients.
This is the thing is if we have a fixed price, we don't benefit from it. And if things go up and down, like there's got to be some form of like we can't continue to be banks for the client and the bank. That's the half the issue.
Oh, great. Look, we recently completed a successful cost plus project with exactly that. Fixed price margin.
Yeah.
The cost of the material was the cost of material. We put no markup on it. It was what it was.
Yeah, and I think that's it allows us to, as builders, maybe move projects faster onto site. Yep. If we can get really good costings, we can maybe skip that whole last estimate to something we can do a really good early one and keep it moving faster.
I actually almost feel that going into a cost plus contract, and if any, there are any clients out there wanting to do a cost plus contract with us, I'm actually going to spend longer costing your project.
Yeah, I'd probably set it up in a different way where I'd want to have all my estimates and show you, hey, this is what we want. I think on the provision of like, if we go cost plus, it's not let's get four plumbing quotes. It's like, no, we still want to use our plumber because we trust him and we know he's going to do it right.
Yeah.
And we know we can trust him compared to John the plumber up the road who's half the price, but we don't know what's included in, yeah, and how he's going to deal with people on site. So I think
there's... You touched on something really interesting there. Like when we're costing projects, we're typically only putting it out to one supplier or one trade because... we have a known relationship with them.
So I'm for the first time starting to see what else is out there. Look, and it's a hard conversation to have with your trades, but I think that we need to like, so I think there's a part where sometimes maybe builders get, we don't get comfortable, but it's always good having two. And as we grow as well, I can't have the same joiner doing all my work because I can't have them at two places at once either.
Look, I agree with them. I agree with you. But what we're not doing, and look, full disclosure, we've done it, on a couple of larger projects that we're costing at the moment. You know, they're north of $3 million. And I guess for the client, we've gone out and tested the price because we want to benchmark that against something.
But I don't play them off. I don't tell. No. And I'll use my joiners as an example, just as because I'm looking at some joinery now. But I don't go to, hey, company A and company B, you're both pricing against each other, come in the cheapest. I just go, hey, can you just both price it, get it back, and be like, I think in this case, I look at the schedule and go, I think that one will come in here, and go, I think that's going to be the best value at that time for that client. I know each joiner, I'm just using them as an example, they might get a Polytech. One might get better Polytech price and one might get a better Laminex price. Mm. So we just have to navigate that.
Yeah, look, price is a tricky one. And I think we're going to chat with some estimators that we've used in the past coming up.
Yeah, we could do one. I think what we could do, we could start with something like ProCalc.
Yep.
I know you've worked with Pricer Plan. Yeah, I've worked with Rapid QS. Yep. We've got Tara from Art House. And then we can start to have and we can even potentially try to bring him in as a conversation. And let them take what they're seeing because they're kind of across the country too, like whilst we're in Victoria. And then as builders, we can have the conversation like then how do we navigate it and hopefully potentially give a more understanding on what goes into a project. So I do know that architects really respect the work that we put in and the stuff that we'll flag and we'll come up with ways to potentially go, hey, this is how we can value management. We don't – I think there's – it's a scary topic to navigate because people – I think have a misconception that builders are just, they're just putting so much margin on the project, making so much money.
I'm going to go on the record right now and say the money that drops out the bottom at the end of the day, I work so fucking hard for, believe me when I say that. And, is there a potential as builders to earn a good living? Absolutely. But the risk of also going backwards on a project can be catastrophic as well.
And look how many builders have gone under in Victoria. That's showing they're not making crazy amount of money.
You want your builder to make money. You want your builder to be profitable.
Yeah, so they're around. So they're there to fix problems in the future. And that's why we get awesome clients. And I know we see so many builders being like, oh, my clients suck. It's the reason we have such good relationships with our clients because they value us. They trust us. That they've paid a good amount of money to get a good build. They get that. And then... Yeah. We're still around to have that conversation post-construction. Like a project we just finished, was it mid last year? There was three other houses being built in the street at the same time. One of them was being built. It actually, they started before us. They just finished. And the builder said to them, when they kept the clients being, this is what the client told me, they kept saying, hey, how come it's taking so long? And the builder goes, just be lucky that I'm still around. My dad was saying at a guy at work, he had quoted timber in the build. They put aluminium in and he's like, what are you going to do about it? Because they just wanted to get cost back. Wow. So the thing is like that also comes at a cost. Yeah, I think when we talk about building prices that what something might look on paper, it's also the reputation. And we go back to the conversation earlier about the industry and the budget meets brief. I think part of that budget meets brief conversation is speaking to our clients that how they've done it in the past and how they achieved it. I think that is a really important thing where most clients will probably reach out and say, hey, like what was the build quality like? How are they on site? Like that's our bread and butter. That's easy. the question I'd be asking is like, how did they go getting a project to budget and what challenges did you have?
Yep.
I think that's a really important conversation to have, and what tools are at their disposal? Was it a stressful process? Which I can tell you straight away, it is a stressful process.
Yep. I think the more time you spend in pre-construction, the less stressful the actual building is going to be. Now, I reckon we
wrap this one up
because we have a whole bunch of other podcasts that we are going to record.
What have we got over the next few days? We have people like
Justin from PHCP.
PHCP down Tassie, Performance Membranes. We have Devin from Performance Membranes, Jake from Notorious Tools and Performance Membranes.
David Coolstra, the reluctant owner of Fenster and Panel, coming on.
Yeah, we've got Jura Panel coming in. Yep. We've got
interior designer, Shivani from Madison Interiors.
We'll wrap this one up. We're super excited for the content we're going to bring you over the next few days.